Life Audio.
Hey, Happy Rat listeners. This is your host, Barnabas Piper, here as always with Ronald J. Martin, Sans Ted. We have one of our summer schedule mishaps where we just all can't get available at the same time. So it's the two of us holding it down today. Ronnie, how you doing? Where are you at in your travels these days?
Dude, I'm hanging. Yeah, I'm good. I'm home, so not a lot of traveling until next Monday, which is a trip to Wyoming with 15 dudes to watch them fly fish, watch them get on boats and do, you know, all kinds of rugged things while I hopefully just get to sort of hang at the lodge and hike around and, you know, do all that kind of stuff.
And post whimsical things about the beauty of nature.
Here's the thing. There's no Wi-Fi. That will be an impossibility.
Oh, but you have a note in your phone with drafts of such things for, you know, right? Don't you like you see something, it catches your fancy, you draft it and then you post it when you strike while the iron is hot, so to speak.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, but I don't know. Word on the street, or I should say in the mountains, is that your phone is worthless in this place. So I don't know, you know.
Still a good camera, especially if you got that iPhone 14 Plus or whatever it is, 14 Pro. I think that's what I have.
Does the camera still work if there's no?
Oh yeah,
you can.
Yeah, a couple summers ago when I was up in Canada for a fishing trip, and like, you know, you're 700 miles from the closest cell tower, and if you were, you know, you'd still have to pay Canadian data rates and whatever. Still takes great pictures, so you don't worry.
I'm in.
Yeah. Whimsy is at your fingertips.
Well, now that you said that, I'm not worried. Since whimsy is in my heart, it needs to be at my fingertips. And since you told me it is, I feel a little bit better about the trip now. I'll be honest with you.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing those photos released one by one post trip.
Somehow I doubt that, but I appreciate the sentiment, man. I appreciate you being kind right now.
Well, we've got a couple of great topics today, including one very much about social media and a new social media platform that launched. So let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk about Threads.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, so maybe a week ago at this point, it's hard to tell, a week ago from the time of this recording, an app called Threads dropped, and it, you know, it's from Meta, which was Facebook, the kind of the parent company, and it's functionally a competitor to Twitter. And, you know, I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on this. I've been trying it out, but I want to hear your kind of how you decided to get on it, how you're using it, first impressions. And then I have some very specific questions about the general tone of this thing and how people are describing it as sort of the savior of social media, as far as I can tell. So what was your kind of initial impression, and how did you get on it and all that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was like everybody else. I think I just woke up to it on a Monday or whenever it dropped, you know? And so, you know, everybody on Twitter's talking about it. And, you know, I'm already on Instagram, so obviously it was easy just to kind of go to it and then sign up for it through Instagram. So it was literally, I think, like two clicks to like, quote, get on it and then be a part of it. And, so if something's that easy, you can either choose to use or not use it. So I just got on it, started scoping it out. So I like that part of it. I was just trying to get my head around it. It felt, you know, like everything on first glance, it's like, wait a minute, what am I looking at here? But then it slowly, as you're looking at it, you know, it starts to make sense. It's kind of a quasi Twitter. And I think for me personally, I've always been like a super, super, with the three or four like major social media apps, I've always been way late to the game on these things. And so I'm like, oh, wow. So I'm actually here on the first day, opening night, you know, like I've arrived, you know, at Threads. So I thought like, well, that's interesting. That's never happened before. So I was intrigued on it. I was intrigued because it was so easy to get on. It was the first day and I wasn't a latecomer. And then also, you know, we'll get into this, I'm sure, but also the thoughts that came after, which was, what did I just do? Why am I doing this? And what is the point?
It is funny because, you know, when social media was launching, you had the opportunity to be an early adopter. And with this, like, I guess you and I are early adopters, but like, is it early adopter if all you do is click one button and it just imports Instagram into this? You know, you're just like, well, I mean,
yeah, maybe not.
I thought adoption took a little bit more commitment than that. This,
and sometimes a lot of money when it includes a human child. But
yeah, or a pet, which I consider that more of a purchase than an adoption, but still. I had kind of the similar thing where I had heard nothing about this thing launching. I don't know if it was just like they surprised us all or if I just have been out of the loop, because I'm probably as disengaged with social media now as I ever have been in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. But so I wake up to it. I see this thing. I see the other people who are joining and kind of their initial response. And I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, I do what I did with Snapchat like 8 years ago, where I sign up, I take 30 seconds to look at it and go, nope, not for me. But I joined it and I was like, this feels like the early days of Twitter in terms of the simplicity, the cleanliness, the design is awesome. And then I very quickly realized, I'm like, this has got to be like a beta version because there are no features. You can't really figure out who you're following and all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a little clunky.
I was basically like, well, if I can get a year of decent Twitter out of this versus the certain, you know, the current dumpster fire of you know, present day Twitter, I'm like, cool, I'll give it a shot. It's not hard.
Yeah.
But what I realized really quick, and maybe you've seen the same thing, well, two things. One is the sheer number of people who have bailed on Twitter, like people who I like and respect, who are now on Threads and using it pretty actively. So I think like Ray Ortland and Jackie Hill Perry and Jasmine Holmes and a whole bunch of people who were just like, Twitter is negative, it's abusive, it's mean, I'm leaving, which is understandable. Totally. But now they're all over this platform, which is fun. And the second thing that I noticed is the general sense of like, everybody's like, this is such a more positive place. This is such a more decent place that's not so vitriolic. There's no porn here. And my thought was, I mean, I don't know if this is cynical or realistic. My thought was, give it 2 weeks. Like, people are people. It's still human users. You know, those people, you know, if there are people who are putting bots out there to, you know, to spam everybody, they just haven't figured it out yet. How have you seen the same thing in terms of sort of this overwhelming positivity? And then what has your thought been on that front?
Yeah. So, you know, I think everything you said is valid. So the positivity, I think, comes from Instagram. Instagram has always been more positive. You know, people just post photos. Yeah. It's a little friendlier. So I think that the spirit of IG just kind of has, you know, transferred over to Threads. And so that's cool. That's nice. It definitely feels a little more like that. I think, you know, the ability to not follow the people you want, but you're seeing everything has kind of put a damper on, I think, is, you know, kind of making it as fun as it could be. And even as positive as it could be. But I think it's just that spirit of Instagram is kind of transferred. And I think there's a lot of hope that it could remain that way because we've seen it that way on Instagram. Instagram has kind of remained that way. So, I guess it's like anything else, Pipe. It's like, I guess we can just, when something is new and shiny, you know, when you get that new car, you know, in a year, it's going to have dents on it. It's going to begin to get a little rusty, and that, you know, things are going to need to be replaced. But I guess we can just enjoy it in the moment as being new and shiny and beautiful. Obviously, it's going to turn into what it's going to turn into. But, you know, I don't know, Pipe. I think so I kind of got a follow-up question to that, because I think, you know, I think we are a little more together on our view of Twitter, which is, you know, you can – this is my opinion, but I believe it's not as hard as some people make it out to be to ignore all the bad stuff on Twitter. You know, I am not full of angst being on Twitter every day. I don't get into debates and arguments, and, you know, I don't have a bunch of people saying horrible things to me and about me on Twitter. And I think if you're somebody with a huge platform, you're ripe for that. I mean, that just comes with the territory. And then I think you can be a type of personality that kind of invites that and you know, kind of welcomes that and kind of likes that while you're complaining about it. But I don't see you engaged with Twitter like that, just like I'm not engaged with Twitter like that. So in that sense, I mean, Usher, Threads feels like it's ushering in something that, I don't know, isn't going to feel a whole lot different for me, even though I can see that it's different for a lot of other people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Twitter front. I think there is something to be said for a lot of the people who find Twitter very negative. It seems like there's sort of two camps. There's people who, and I don't mean this as a pejorative, are just more sensitive. You know, when they see nastiness, it really hits home. Whereas
it really hits them. Yeah,
I'm
for
pretty
sure.
jaded to it. And so if somebody is you know, an utter jack wagon to me, I'm just like, and mute. And the other thing is there, you and I are not subject to sort of the attacks that women get in their DMs you know, just sort of some of the super sexualized stuff, the super misogynistic stuff, and we're not minorities. And so, you know, all the racial stuff. So we're just protected by our existence from some of those things, which I completely understand. You know, I don't personally see that stuff, but when somebody I trust says, yeah, it's daily. You know, there are daily totally. Comments about race. There are daily comments about sexuality and gender. That stuff, I go, yeah, I think I might duck out of. Like, why would I voluntarily subject myself to that? So,
yeah,
you know,
agreed.
If Threads figures out how to do a better job of policing that, you know, because like Elon Musk, basically, you know, his version of free speech is, you can be as hateful as you want.
Pretty
you
hateful.
Know, like there's no brakes on this joint. And so if Threads is like, no, we're going to cut down on abusive speech of any kind, you know, that would be beneficial. And then my hope is that they also keep the algorithm such that what they prioritize is what people select rather than what they're promoting. But of course, that's not how money is made.
Right,
I will
exactly.
also go out on a limb and say, you know, people have been like, it's a porn-free site. I'm like, no, it's not. It's 100% not. It's, you know, maybe there aren't like the porn bots that are following, but when I scroll through the sort of everything feed, it's not that different than Instagram in the, like, there are still a whole bunch of women who are basically, you know, posting scantily clad pictures and inviting you to follow them. And, you know, you can mute and block and whatever, but like it's there because that sin still exists in the world. I think that the thing that is fascinating to me most of all is the immediate desire and maybe self-delusional belief that people have that we can do better. Like, you know what I mean? The like, it's this new thing. It's going to be so much better than the old thing. And I just don't see the world that way. My sense is that every new thing becomes the old thing. And maybe that's not very Christian of me. So, you know, pastor me on this one. Like, am I overly cynical or am I an early adopter of where this thing is going?
Well, I think you can have a realistic take on what you just said. And you can say, hey, you know, things tend to decay and we've seen it on every other platform. So it would be naive maybe to think that it wouldn't happen. with Threads. Kind of going back to what I said a minute ago, though, we can enjoy it for what it is in the moment that we have it, which is everybody's trying really hard and it's new and it's nicer. It's a little shinier. We don't have dents yet. We don't have to replace the brakes yet. We don't have to bring it to, we don't have to get the oil changed quite yet. So it's still running off that. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think we have to be mad about it. I think we can say, there's a good chance that this thing is not going to be as quote unquote great as it is, on the first day that it releases. But I think going off of what you said though, Pipe, this is what I find, and it's attached to what you said, more amazing, is I felt like there were some people that were like they were thrilled, taking the optimism that you just name checked. They were thrilled to the point of I don't even know how to describe this. They were like excited and thrilled and happy to the point that it was almost like they were embracing the app almost like it was a person or a best friend or a long lost relative that they reunited with. Like, to me, they were giving it like a level of like glee and happiness and importance that I thought, hey, I don't know that any app should warrant this level of just like almost like pre-devotion, because it's like it's just an app, like it shouldn't be that important in our lives. It can be important. It can be something we really enjoy. It can be something that really enhances our lives. It can be something that actually even changes our lives, affects our lives. But like, I feel like there was a level of like importance that some people were putting on it to the degree where I go, well, I almost think like we're not even talking about the right thing. We should almost be talking about our relationship with these apps anyway, which I know gets talked about ad nauseum, but it's like, hold on. Like you are just like, you are way too delirious like over this whole thing. Did you catch that?
Oh yeah. And I think in some people's case, it's like, I saw, people who really missed being on Twitter, they missed the days of Twitter when interaction was less, and I will say this, like, there are a lot of things that I don't post on Twitter that are pretty innocuous, because I'm like, I just don't want to deal with the crap. Like, everything gets well-actuallyed. Yeah. So I'm just like, well, I'm going to keep that opinion to myself. Or I'm going to have a conversation rather than post it on here. I think there's a lot of people who miss the halcyon days of happy Twitter. And so this to them is like, oh, we've got it back. But to what you were saying, there was also an attitude of, you ever see like a 6-year-old who gets a walkie-talkie for Christmas? And they're just like, this thing has changed my life. I can now talk to my friends from 100 yards away. We can sneak. I mean, it has created a universe for them of adventure and backyards and whatever. It has that vibe to it, except that these are like 50-year-olds or, 32-year-olds. And you're like, it's like the walkie-talkie. It's going to end up in the dustbin in the garage at some point. Like, it's just, or in a bin, like, just, with cobwebs on it. And like, you're going to have to duck the brown recluse to dig it out kind of thing. And but it had that vibe to it where you're kind of excited for them. And all, you're also like, oh boy, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to want another new thing in a certain amount of time. If you use it well, it's useful. And I don't know. I realize, right. I sound very grumpy and cynical. I think my general take. Well, yeah, I mean, on brand.
You're on brand, Pipe. You're sounding like grandpa right now. But
like my general take on social media is that, and this includes wise Christians, which is what baffles me. People look to the next step in it as an improvement. It's like a moral improvement, a tone improvement, a positivity improvement. And I'm like, based on what? What evidence do we have that billionaires creating platforms to make money off of people is going to create a more positive environment? I'm using Threads. I'm enjoying Threads to a degree. It's kind of a casual, like, yeah, this seems fun. But I am so thrown by the like overwhelming positivity that I've seen, where people are just like, this is what I've been yearning for, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's what I was kind of driving at. I think it's just, and I think it's kind of it's a moment we're in right now where a lot of us hide out on social media, and it's become way too, it's become like a bigger part of our lives than it was than I think it should ever be intended to become. And I think, you know, it just has, you know, I mean, again, I'm not saying anything new or brilliant, but, you know, I think just gauging from, again, just some people's public opinion of it. I think I was kind of thrown for that. I mean, and to your point, which is just this sense of like, well, like, should we, like, wisdom would tell us to sort of be cautious. Like, we can be optimistic, but be cautious. And, we can hold both those things in tension, you know? And I think for something like this, given what we've learned about all the previous platforms or apps, you know, we should probably do that. Right. And it just shouldn't be that, you know, the thing is, like, you and me, like, we're on these apps a lot, you know, and again, depending on the day, you know, it depends, right, the percentage of time we spend. But we generally are on these on a pretty steady basis. You and I talk about things. Hey, did you see that? You know, we have some weeks where we're not on as much, but we have a general, like, attachment to these apps. And yet, like, they cannot become the thing that sort of, like, motivates you and moves you and inspires you and depresses you. And they can't be held accountable for, like, our very, like, life in being.
Yeah. Know? Or like the litmus test for how humanity is doing. I mean, I'm always baffled when I take a step back. You know, I spend an evening hanging out with the elders of our church or our friends from small group or even just like our neighbors, you know, many of, you know, people who aren't believers, and just real human interactions. And the vibe I get in those situations is both way more complex, and generally I come away feeling pretty good. You know, this is a good human interaction. And then, you know, you use social media as the litmus test and you're like, oh, humanity is waging war and is going to tear each other's throats out. And I'm like, well, I don't ever have those interactions in person. Ever.
Right, exactly.
And so when we lean too heavily into these things, it totally skews our perception of all of reality. I want to end our conversation about Threads with one observation and ending on a positive note, which is I will say this for Threads. It is a platform where you can purely have fun. You know, it is no longer safe to post jokes on Twitter because humor is dead on Twitter. It's not dead on Threads. You can be snarky. You can make random observations. You can be humorous. You can even poke jokes about the church because all the angry conservative folks haven't found their way to Threads yet. So
yeah,
humor lives. And that I have found a good amount of enjoyment in.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's, I mean, so I think we can, and that's good. That's a good way to end it. And I'll just add, you know, hopefully sort of that Instagram spirit will, like, kind of remain alive in it. It's not going to be perfect, but it is just going to be a little more, like you said, a little more optimistic. Everybody's showing a little more grace. Everybody's wanting to be, you know, a little more forgiving. So that's a good thing.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we will come back with a question about preaching, and particularly a phrase that you and I were discussing recently that came up in terms of kind of a manner of preaching. So let's take a quick break and then come back and talk about that.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now, 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, so a couple days ago, I reposted something on Threads, I think, and on Instagram. It was a repost of, I think, Jackie Hill Perry, who made a comment about basically comparing, like, getting cute in preaching and trying to preach a series of sound bites versus, and to use the phrase that she used, flat-footed preaching of the gospel, which is a phrase that I love. I don't use it often because it doesn't sound quite right coming from me, I don't think, but I love the tone and the meaning of it. So I reposted this, said, I love this phrase. You texted me, like, I don't know, 10 minutes later and said, man, I've just had a bunch of conversations with friends about this, or this has come up in conversations. Tell me about those conversations and your sort of interactions with flat-footed preaching.
Yeah, so it wasn't so much conversations. I was seeing other people post about it.
Okay.
And I wasn't exactly like I knew what they meant, right? Because they would always explain it. So it was something where they would say, you know, kind of like that Perry post, which was, hey, you know, can we just, it was almost a sense of this sense of like, some of the preaching that we've been subjected to over the last however many years, which is just, we want everything to be quotable. You know, it's almost like, our sermons sound like, you know, just a sort of a collection of like, you know, 50 tweets. Because we want everything to be kind of dramatic and clever and sound ultra sage and super wise. And I think, and I've heard some people kind of talk about this idea of flat-footed preaching, which is like, you know, how about just preaching the word, and it can just be very simple. It can be very straight. It doesn't have to, we don't always have to try to impress with knowledge, and we don't even have to try to be overly clever. You know, just say things very simply the way scripture says these things, and we can make it less about ourselves. And maybe there needs to be a return to that, because we're getting a little tired of, you know, of some of these other things that kind of go in the opposite direction. So when you said that, I was like, okay, I'm hearing this word come up, and I'm wondering if, you know, like, things go in cycles and things go in trends. And so I was just curious, you know, like, it kind of piqued my,
you're like, is this the new gospel centered? Is Jared Wilson going to become like the flat-footed life? That kind of thing? Is that where you
I think this? I think Jared C. is a flat-footed preacher, which is so funny, because he's a good preacher, and he keeps it very, he's very organized. He's not overly clever. I mean, he would be the definition of that. You know, he's a good, he just kind of preaches the word. He has really good insights. He's not trying to trick anybody. He's not trying to get gasps out of anybody.
Yeah.
And so he really would be the definition of that. Probably so would Jackie Hill Perry and, you know, some of these other people that are, you know, that are good speakers and preachers, and we, you know, but in terms of just kind of name checking it, and, you know, because, you know, Pipe, we've talked about this, like, you know, sort of this bombastic preaching from the Driscoll era where everything is loud and sarcastic, you know, we kind of name checked that and we moved on from that. And maybe, you know, with this Keller era of preaching, and again, Keller was very flat-footed, so I'm not saying that, but just more of this, like, hey, we're trying to maybe come up with concepts that are, I don't know, they can go in areas or directions that are maybe a little too vague or a little too overly clever, and do we need to turn another corner with it? I don't know.
Yeah, so I ran into, I think, I've heard the phrase over the years, and the context has always been from a faithful black preacher. So I think the phrase flat-footed preaching is one that is more kind of a traditional use in the black church. And it's a designation between, like, are you just throwing the gospel, clarity about Christ, about obeying scripture right down the center, or are you getting cute? Or are you diverging from that, and you're inspirational, you're cute, you're making eyes on you instead of eyes on Christ, that kind of thing. And you know, I'm at Grimke, and the president of Grimke is a guy named Doug Logan, who's a, you know, I've known Doug for a long time, and wonderful preacher, great professor, hilarious man. And this is one of the things that he is constantly urging the students there, is to preach a flat-footed gospel, to use his phrase. Basically, just clear, no bones about it. The kind of boldness and clarity that will offend some people because the message is offensive, that kind of thing. Like, you just, nobody comes away wondering who you're with, where you stand, or what you mean. And which fits really well with what Jackie said in her post about kind of getting cute and being sound bites, where people come away with a lot of quotes and no point. And I think it's fascinating that this phrase has made its way into into the circles that you run in, which are largely white, not traditional black church. But I love the image of it, just because you picture somebody who's just standing there and just speaking directly at the congregation instead of you even think like the physical mannerisms, and I'm going to throw out some names here because that's what we do on this podcast. You think back to like Rob Bell was always like tiptoeing around the stage and gesticulating and hands all over the place, and like it felt very kind of interpretive dance meets metaphorical message kind of thing. Like, it's even the way he preached was like the opposite of flat-footed in terms of he's getting cute. And you see some of the same things with like Furtick. I was having this conversation with somebody recently, and I realized it's not kosher these days to draw lines, but I was like, they were like, they didn't really know who Furtick was, and they're like, what's the deal here? And I was like, He doesn't preach a gospel that just points people to Christ. It's a lot of inspirational this, empowerment that, you are the David to the world's Goliath kind of thing.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And then I think about, somebody like Doug Logan, or there's a guy named Robert Smith, or like my dad. And I'm like, you never come away from a sermon wondering what their point was. You might not have followed everything with my dad because it got complex, but like, he was throwing it right down the middle, and he was just standing there chucking it.
Yeah, no, totally. I think, that was going to be my question, which was who do we, and I know Rob Bell's kind of an old example, but like, who do we think of, and Furtick I think is good, where, what are some modern examples, or even style, like even, maybe if not even a person, just stylistically that we can think of that's like, yeah, this is a person that's just, it's just, they're trying to be overly clever. It doesn't mean the gospel never comes through. It just means that to listen to them is not to walk away with like a deeper knowledge, affection, and longing for Christ, which is, again, we would say that's gospel-centered preaching, right? But what are we seeing like sort of popping up in evangelicalism now that would even make a Jackie Hill Perry post something like that?
Yeah, I think she's in a unique position because she's obviously, like, when she stands up and speaks and preaches, she is doing so with clarity and force, from Scripture. But she gets invited to speak at conferences and events that have a ton of sort of like positive inspirational speakers. And so it's like the LaCroix of Christianity. There's like hint of Christianity in the air, and then a lot of self-fulfillment kind of stuff. I am enough type of stuff. And, if we're going to divide along gender lines, like that is very prominent in kind of a lot of the women speaker stuff, but it's really prominent in a lot of the leadership space as well, focused on, it's probably going to be more dominated by men. And again, get like Christian leadership authors, and it's a lot of this. Hey man, what a Christian CEO needs to hear is not, just sort of seven principles to be the savviest leader, but also like, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. There's a flat-footed clarity, so to speak. And so I think she's probably coming at it from that perspective, where she just sees, in the publishing world and the speaking world, a lot of this, like, if you follow that person's message all the way to its conclusion, you don't end up at dependence on Christ. You end up
Yeah, for sure.
independence on yourself, thinking that Christ is sort of sprinkling on some Holy Spirit fairy dust or something.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I think, you know, it's so funny too, because it's like, you know, we have this tendency as human beings where, you know, if you are doing any kind of public speaking or writing or communication or preaching or whatever, like whatever the medium is, where like your words, people are listening to your words and then they get to form an opinion about not just your words, but even the manner in which you communicate those words. You know, it's like anything else. Like, I mean, I want people to think I'm a good speaker, and I want people to walk away going, wow, I never thought of it like that. And wow, that was a deep insight. And hey, I've never heard anybody phrase it like that. And so like, it's just natural to want people to like say that I'm impressed by you, that was good, you know? And so, I think the tendency in preaching, you know, it's like, because we're human beings, you know, that tendency to want to elevate ourselves and make ourselves look like, hey, I actually wrote these words, when in actuality, it's like, actually you didn't write any of those words. And if you're doing it right, people really know you didn't, you know? But there's that human tendency, that ego, that pride, that is just like, we got to be hitting against that. We got to battle against that. Because, you know, people walking away thinking we are awesome is not the point of any of our sermons or public speaking
games. Yeah. You know? Well, I think too, you know, the critique that I just gave kind of looks at a subset of public Christianity that I'd say you and I are kind of, we're not really part of that.
But to look at
our camp, the more reformed world, the same critique applies, but instead of sort of being gospel vague and gospel, kind of self-focused, it's, you know, even like you take some of the messages that have been preached at some of the most prominent pastors' conferences that, you know, that we would have gone to, or mm-hmm. I used to go to in publishing. A lot of those messages are not a flat-footed gospel because they're so complex. They're so intricate. They're basically an exegetical lecture that the point that people come away from is more like, oh, this verb is in the aorist tense, not, you know, Jesus is amazing, or as a pastor, I'm dependent on him, or this is the character of Christ, or. And so the same problem applies. And the heart that you just said, I think is the same problem, because, you know, instead of looking cute, there's an effort to look brilliant.
Look smart.
And,
yeah.
You know, instead of making people go, ooh, you make people go, oh, mm-hmm, yeah. And then, you know, they write down complex notes, and the point is still missed. So you actually get caught in the depths instead of caught in the kind of vagaries.
Yeah, you get caught in the wrong depths, right? You get caught in the depths of sort of the verbiage and sort of the wordplay of the speaker more than you do in who that they're actually proclaiming and speaking about, allegedly, you know. So yeah, no, I think that's good. I think I don't think our tribe is any less, you know, I don't think we're able to stand back and go, yeah, it's all of them over there. I mean, it's rooted out of human nature, and whatever side of it you come at or come out of with, you know, on it, it's the same old problem, which is that I want to increase. The increase decrease percentage is flipped, right? And that's the problem at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I have found that encouragement from, you know, from Doug Logan and others like him has been very formative as, you know, as I preach, just because it does perpetually pull the mind back to clarity over impressiveness, clarity over cuteness, and when people walk away, who is their biggest impression of, you know, and if it's of me, maybe they listened wrong. Probably I preached wrong. You know, I preached in a way that put eyes on me rather than pointing eyes where they ought to be.
Yeah. And maybe not, you know, I mean, our fans don't know this. I mean, I saw you preach, let me make you uncomfortable here for a minute, Pipe. I saw you preach a few weeks ago. We were on the road traveling, stopped in at Emmanuel and saw you preach. And, you know, I mean, it was very flat-footed preaching. And I think you caught that balance where, you did say some rather profound things. But you also, it was very on the ground though. It was very earthy. It was very like, you know, I'm giving you examples. I'm drawing out implications and applications that are, these are just the things we faced on, you know, this is life for us, you know, cause a sermon has to be, you know, it has to be rooted in the life we actually live, not even in the life we hope to live. You know, it has to be rooted in the life we actually live so that the life we hope to live can become more true of mm-hmm. who we are as we're being sanctified, you know? And it's like, and you did that, you know? And somebody could also walk away because, you know, it's not only preachers that are human. It's people listening are human too. So they can also draw things from preaching that they need to question themselves. In other words, you can be so enamored with somebody as a speaker or a preacher
yeah.
that it's not their fault that you are not getting the Christ that they're preaching. You know, and so it goes yeah. both ways too.
Yeah, I mean, my dad being who he is, I saw that a lot. I saw his frustration at that
man,
kind of behind 100%. The scenes because he, you know, there's this sort of psychotic fandom that some people have
totally
to their great expense because he would get up and preach from Romans 8, you know, which, you know, this maybe the one of the most theologically rich passages in the Bible. And what people would leave going was, I can't, you know, can you believe how John said this and John that? And, you yeah, know, they would come yeah. to the church just for him. And, you know, God uses people. You know, people go to conferences to hear particular preachers. But, man, that comes at the expense of the listener often.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I got one more question for you that we'll take quick at the end. But let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about some book things real quick. So let's take a break.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, last question of the episode, and this is one of those sort of speculative ones, reading the marketplace, looking at the preponderance of stuff that's been published. And the question is just this: what Christian books need to be published now? You know, what are we missing? Because it feels like I can no longer keep up with what all is being released. There's good books coming out. There's terrible books coming out. It's hard enough to sort between those. What still needs to be published? And I'm not doing market research on what I should write next because I'm not writing anything for a while, I don't think. Just kind of looking at it and going, I don't know, man. This boy, has the world changed on the book front.
I mean, you know, my first thought when you asked that was, I mean, it, you know, again, this is going to be overstating it, but has it all been written? You know, like, I feel like if I desire a book on literally any topic related to any part of my faith, I think I'll be able to kind of find it. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like there's just such a, there's a lot of books, you know, being written right now. And, you know, there's probably a million different reasons for that, you know, but I think I think a lot of people, a lot of writers. So here's a way to spin it positively: is that there's a lot of writers that have freedom to probably write about and tease out some things that maybe publishers wouldn't have been so willing to publish years and years ago, and now you know some of those things that may have been controversial 30 years ago are allowed to sort of like be released and be thought through and considered. It just seems like there's everything right now, you know. It's almost like asking, like, what food do you think needs to be, you know, created that's not out there for us to eat? It's like, I don't know. It seems like it's all there somewhere. It's all there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's probably like really limited and ignorant. But I don't know. I never. So even the stuff that I'm writing, it's like I'm just trying to write something that interests me. I never once would I say, oh, there's nothing else like this written. You know what I'm saying?
It's just no one has ever achieved these heights.
No, I'm going to say that you can write certain things at certain times of which haven't been tapped in a while. So here's a weird plug, and I don't ever do this, but we just released a book called Pastoring Small Towns. That market is not full right now. People have written books about pastoring small towns, but as that movement is starting to take shape and grow and build a little bit, it is not overloaded right now. There's not a million books to go get about that topic. Of course, that doesn't mean it hasn't. It's narrow right now. So
yeah,
that's kind of nice. That's kind of nice, but it doesn't mean you can't find something else.
Well, I think what you just said is informs how I think about this, which is if you think about it in terms of what has never been written, you should not write a book, because you will write something so obscure, so useless. Now, if you write what is outdated, what is there not something currently useful on? So like an area that I think, there have been so many books published on it and very few good ones is like masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
That's one where, I could probably name 10 books on manhood, almost none of which would I put in the hands of a 24-year-old guy who's like, I want to be a godly adult male. I want to understand masculinity in terms of God's design, but not in terms of, cultural, expectations, good or, conservative or progressive, whatever. There's not a lot out there on that that I'm aware of. So it's and like your book, is it called Pastoring in Small Towns or Small Town Pastor? What is the actual title?
It's just called Pastoring Small Towns.
Pastoring Small Towns. Okay. So yes, stuff has been written on that. Not a ton. And also small towns in 2023 are very different than small towns in 1994 or 1971 or 1952. Yeah. And so the internet has changed the world and urbanization has changed things. And so you're writing to a changed context. So that, your book might not be relevant in 5 years, but it might be incredibly helpful for the next 5 years. It's one of those kinds of things. So yeah, I'm when I think about it, I think like when I worked in publishing, I noticed that books would come in waves. Two or three prominent books on marriage, like Paul Tripp's and Tim Keller's and like my dad's all came out within kind of a window of time. So there's Tripp's was, I think it originally was called What Did You Expect? It's now just called Marriage. They retitled it. Then The Meaning of Marriage by Keller. And then honestly, I can't remember my dad's, but marriage book. And then we kind of don't need any more for a little while. But we're coming to the place where we do need some because those are still good, like relevance and newness introduces old truths in new ways. And so that's beneficial. Yeah. So, it's beneficial to have books on manhood and marriage and some of these kinds of things. I think re-releasing old stuff, knowing God could probably be re-released every 4 years just to put it at the front of the line. Although I think IVP is doing a lot of that. They're taking some of those classics and re-releasing them, which I love. Are there any, like when you think about your congregation, what's a book you would like to put in their hands that you're like, there's not anything really good out there on this?
Oh man, that's actually a really good question. Cause we have a library at the church that we just, we try to fill up with good stuff and people can just sort of take it as they want. And So we try to have all the, I don't know, what we consider to be, good authors and, classics like Knowing God and things of that nature. But yeah, gosh, that's a really, I wish what I would like our people to read more of is stuff that is a little more controversial right now, that I think, we actually have in our bookstore, and there would be a shyness, maybe a resistance to reading, things like Color of Compromise by Jamar Tisby, things that have become controversial over the last few years, but that, from even a historical perspective are really good, super helpful. I would like our people to dive a little more into those types of books. And there's a lot of those books have been written over the last few years. And I think, a lot of them are good. I would just like them to delve into some of those books that have already been written that, in our circles, which is small town, mid-Ohio, 98% Caucasian, there's not getting a lot of play. We're making them available, but they're not being utilized. So I would like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that is, and context is so important on that, because I was talking to a friend of mine who he's a black guy, pastored on the East Coast for a while in a really diverse church, you know, multi-ethnic. And he said that some of those kinds of books were not helpful in his context because of those issues sat at the surface. So like the education or the awareness piece of issues of like the history of racial injustice in the church kind of didn't need to be a front and, you know, center issue as much as like, how do black and white people and some Hispanic people worship really well together? Because that's what we're trying to figure out on Sundays. And so, you know, context is really important on this. I think about our context in Nashville, you know, younger church, you know, a lot of young families. That's our median age is probably early 30s, something like that.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm more and more aware of is just the aggressive preponderance of kind of mental health leaning self-fulfillment stuff air. You know, you and I have talked about this. Like, it's different in your context, where for us, like, counseling and therapy and psychology is kind of seen as the utmost value, like probably above pastors in a lot of cases.
That's our congregation too, because that stuff is so widespread now.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's so widespread.
Yeah.
100%. It probably doesn't go as deep as it does with you guys, given your culture, but yeah.
Right. But so some books that are like, you know, when you have mental health issues, and again, that's a very vague term because those are very diagnosable in some cases and kind of oddly, weirdly self-diagnosed in other cases. But what is the relationship between spiritual health and anxiety? The relationship between depression and spiritual health, the relationship between physical health and spiritual health, you know, because that's the other thing, you know, you look around Nashville and you're like, people have made an idol out of physical health. You know, they're like if they balance their proteins and take the right vitamins and work out at just the right levels with the right sort of cycling on and off of whatever, they're kind of at optimal health. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't love Jesus, so you can't be that healthy. And so an integration of those things with the gospel at the forefront, but with due respect to the fact that we were created as body, mind, and soul. That's one where I'm like, man, you know, Ed Welsh and some of the CCEF stuff is really good, but it might be a little dense for folks. Is there a way to do this that just like, I think like some of the books that the Good Book Company has, you know, come out with, like Sam Albrey's Is God Anti-Gay? You know, it's like 100 pages and just crystal clear on a very particular question.
Yeah.
Stuff like that for our people is, that's one where I'm like, who can write this well that we can put 100 copies into circulation?
Because when I think about that, you know, you think about, well, you know, somebody needs to have a little bit of training and background.
Yes.
And education in that, you know, that it can't just be like you and I making up stuff. You know, that may be partially true. That may be kind of true, but like we don't have anything to back it up with, you know? And I think that's really good, actually. I like that. I know I would read that. I'll tell you that much. So.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to land this show. Listeners, as we sign off, don't forget that we have a live show, our last ever live show coming up on September 24th. That is a Sunday. It's in Indianapolis. You can find the information at thehappyrant.com. Just hit the live show. It'll have details about the event, about tickets. We would love for you to come out that evening, be kind of our podcast send-off. So again, thehappyrant.com, hit the live show. There's two tiers of tickets, both of which include some free swag at different levels. It would be awesome to see you out there. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time. We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
I'm Dr. Lauren DeVille, a practicing naturopathic physician in Tucson, Arizona. In my podcast, Christian Natural Health, my guests and I discuss topics ranging from nutrition, sleep, hormone balancing, and exercise to specific health concerns like hair loss, anxiety, and hypothyroidism. I'll also interweave biblical principles as they apply throughout the podcast because true health is body, mind, and spirit. Listen to Christian Natural Health for free at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcast platform.